I'm Mike Vardy, and this is the Productivityist Podcast. Welcome to the Productivityist Podcast. I am your host, Mike Vardy, and this week on the show, Lee Caraher joins me. She is the founder of Double Forte, which is a communications firm that's designed to work with a whole bunch of good things. People that do good work, good companies, by providing the best results and service in the business. She is a communication strategist, and she is the author of Millennials in Management, The Essential Guide to Making It Work at Work. We had a great conversation talking about productivity, which is what we do on this show, but also how it relates to millennials and how millennials deal with things a little bit differently and how to deal with the millennials that deal with it differently. There's a lot to get into during this episode, so we're just going to dive right in. Here's my conversation with Lee Caraher on the Productivityist Podcast. I'd like to welcome Lee Caraher to the Productivityist Podcast. Lee, thanks for joining me this week.
So great to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
So, we were just talking before we got on the show. We were talking about, books, and we're both working on books right now. And there's a lot of stuff that, and we're recording this just to give a sense. We're recording this like well in advance because we're both super proactive people. We want to make sure that we get this stuff taken care of. I want to, for those of people in the audience that aren't familiar with your work, Lee, why don't you share, who you are, what you do, and where you're focusing your energy and your time to make a large impact right now?
Sure. So my name is Lee, and that's the first piece, right? I'm the CEO and founder of a public relations and digital marketing firm. We're based in San Francisco. We have offices in New York and Boston. And we do, we focus on doing great work for great companies who make a good difference. So we just very focused on being a force for good in the category that we're in. Where I focus my time, of course, is running the business. So a lot of time with clients on strategy, but mostly I'm working on the business. And, as an entrepreneur and CEO, that is working with intergenerational people, meaning, how do you motivate this new generation of employee and all that kind of stuff on leadership and management and development and thinking future, which I think is my job is to think future for the company. Where I spend my energy sort of around that is I've written a book about how to work with millennials because so many people are struggling with it and we struggled so much with it. And I just wanted to share how we cracked that code in a productive way. And my next book, which you mentioned I'm writing on, will come out next year, it's about how to make sure that you don't just have people become dead to you when they leave you and how you can have them come back to you in many shapes and forms and how really what we need to be thinking about as leaders and company owners and all that kind of stuff is never letting someone die on the vine and expanding our footprint by creating lifetime allegiance from employees, no matter if they're employed for you or not. And that's where I spend my time in writing and blogging and speaking and workshops.
How important, and this is, I think this ties into both the book you've written, Millennials in Management, which we'll definitely link to in the show notes, and the new book. Mm-hmm. Future-proofing seems to be a big thing for you.
Very much so.
How can you help people, obviously reading the book, but how can you help people not just, we're talking everybody from the boomers all the way down to millennials, like put themselves in position to future-proof, because I don't think people are so focused on the let's get through today that they don't think about the next, beyond that.
I think what's really interesting, particularly for, so first of all, let's think about the dynamics, boomers who this year are 52 to 69, most of those people are working. And all, yes, it's true, people are retiring every day, but not as many as we thought.
No.
Right? Not as many as we thought. And most of us, and I'm a boomer, I'm the last year of boomer, most of us we anticipate having to work much longer than we thought we would have to even in 2007, right?
Right.
And in 2008, really changed the entire dynamic of what's going on in the workplace. Many of us lost just so much money in 2008, 2009, our nest eggs. And if you were 68 that's a whole different equation than when you're 52, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that has really created an entire different and what happened is we found out that we were not employable. Well, I was employable, I had a company. But so many people found out they weren't employable. And they had not kept themselves relevant. So future-proofing for me is about how do we make sure each of us is relevant to right now and to sort of the future. So because we have to be in charge of our own careers and our own paths, we know we cannot count on a company to hold us. And even if you're a company owner and you want to, if you're independent, you know, if you don't have the revenue, you can't pay people. And if you're publicly traded, you know, really the shift happened around 1990 when people started, you know, big companies were laying people off, not because they weren't hitting their goals, but for margin on the street, right?
Right.
So and particularly millennials know this really well. Their parents have told them, do not count on a company. Make sure that you're crafting your own career, and don't stay anywhere too long. You'll be stale and all that kind of stuff. So future for me is, you know, how do we make sure that everyone's current has the skill set so they have options? Because we can't count on anybody but ourselves to create those options for us.
Now, with millennials, the one thing that, I mean, I'm a Gen Xer, so uh-huh. I'm right in, and you know, I mean, it's...
You're squeezed in the middle.
I'm right in the... Generation. Yeah, we're kind of like, what did you do? And then, yes. And they're like, what are we going to do for these guys? So we're kind of like in the middle, and we're the least populous, right?
By almost a half, yeah.
Yeah, and millennials now, I believe, make up most of the workforce at this point. Isn't that correct?
Not quite? Yet. Not yet.
Close. It's close.
I mean, it's the percentage, right?
So, right. So what do you find is the primary difference between working with, say, a Gen Xer versus millennials in terms of, you know, how they approach work?
Well, there's, I think, a dramatic difference. So like you said, Gen Xers are least populous, almost fully a half of the population of boomers or millennials, right? So 79 million, 42 million, 80 million, right? So and a lot of single children in Gen Xers and a lot of latchkey kids who, you know, both parents were working when they were young and they were coming home and getting home.
That's why I'm so good with 80s pop culture and stuff.
Exactly, right. Well, self-starters, very self-sufficient, learned how to make their own meals, unlike their boomer parents because, you know, the boomer came up, you know, I was born in 64, so anyone was born before me, you know, there was a different model at home. For mm-hmm. then, right?
Yep.
Then for the Gen Xers. Millennials, so they're very self-reliant. You know, I've managed a lot of Gen Xers as well early in their careers, too, where I could say, you know, you're not living up to your potential. And that would actually have had a huge impact on that person. That person was like, oh, no, what do you mean I'm not living up to my potential? You know, this is shoddy work, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you use that same term, you're not living up to your potential, with most millennials, it will not have an impact. Millennials are much more of a group dynamic. They care about the group. They care about not letting the group down. And this is the antithesis of Gen Xers, who may not have had a group, right?
Right.
So that one difference on motivation makes a big difference in the workplace. Right. Millennials get a really bad rap, I think, of, you know, they're the me generation. And that is not my experience at all. My experience is that they're a we generation. And when I flipped my frame of reference on talking with millennials about, you know, if their work wasn't really good enough from themselves to how they let the team down, man, it made a huge difference. Not that it would make a difference with the Gen Xers, because it also does. But focusing on the self from another person's point of view seems not to matter to the millennial generation if they're not your parents.
In my experience, talking to a few other people, especially who I was talking to Derek Flansreich of Greatest, and he talks about, like, one of the things that millennials really value is freedom above all. Is that kind of – you have to really take that into account, I would imagine, when you're working with them, because – you know, they're the types that, first off, they know, like you said earlier, that focusing, like, don't figure on having the same job for your entire life, because you're just not going to. So how do you play into that? Like, how do you tackle this, and how do you teach people to say, okay, let's make sure that we let them feel that they've got the freedom within the role that they have, but also that we give them the stability that, frankly, people That they crave, that they need. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's two pieces, right? So there's a lot of dichotomy there. Don't tell me what to do. How am I doing? You know, mm-hmm. Don't tell me what to do. How am I doing?
Yeah.
So, which is maddening. It's maddening for those of us who are like, just do what I tell you to do, right? So how I've approached this and how it's been successful for my company is to say, I know you're going to have great ideas on how to improve this. I know you are, right? But I need you to do it my way first and then improve it.
Mm-hmm.
Because one, it says, I value that you're going to have something new. And you're going to bring something to the table. And that's half the battle, right? Because millennials, you know, it's a very flat world to them. They've been one click away from almost everybody their entire life that they could actually write a sentence, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not hierarchical at all. And they, you know, they're used to having an impact just in just social. Just think about social media and how the impact you can have. So how we approach it now is, please, I know you're going to have to value that they're going to have input and to know and to ask for their input, but to ask for it in a structured way. And so how we do this is, you know, here's the project. Here's your role in the project. Here who else is counting on you in the project, because no one's really alone, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the desired outcome is this. I know you're going to have lots of ideas on how to get there. My request to you is to do it my way first, and then we're going to talk about how to improve it, because I really want to learn from you how to improve it, but I need to know that you know all the dependencies, which you may not even see, right? Because a new person may not see that, you know, Joe in the corner actually needs to see something because you got to tick a box for some compliance issue.
Right.
And that just putting people at ease that I know you have value. I know you're going to have great ideas. We're going to get to those, I promise. And some structure around that really says, you know, that person, and what I've heard feedback from the people we do that with, and then we do it with everybody regardless of age, is I can take a breath now. I know I don't have to prove myself like right this second, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I know that you're going to teach me stuff. I know that there's going to be value there. It's when we just don't even listen and just say, do it my way, or don't even give any guidance. When we give no guidance, so this is what we're trying to get to. Let me know how it goes. That's like the worst thing you can possibly do, particularly to a new hire, right? Because you have give them no structure, and just Googling it is not enough. Just Googling it helps people do a bad job, not because they want to, just because they have no reference.
Well, and you Google it, and now all of a sudden they've got too much information to go through.
Too much information. So that one step of saying, I know you're gonna have great ideas. Please do it my way first, and then we'll talk about how to improve it. Seems to be very effective where we've employed it.
Nuance seems to be a big part of this whole thing.
Huge. Nuance is huge, and you know it's so interesting because nuance is hard, right? Email mm-hmm. is hard to get the nuance on. Texting. That's why emojis, I think, are so interesting and problematic, right? Because one person will interpret an emoji one way and another way, right?
Right.
But emojis are actually more useful than punctuation, frankly, to millennials.
Yes.
Whereas punctuation is more useful to boomers than the emoji. I like both. I'm a huge punctuation. I mean, I work in PR, right? So punctuation is huge for me. I find myself, you know, editing punctuation on text, which is probably not useful time. But just figuring out that nuance, which really requires the face-to-face, and it can be video, but there's so much that you deliver in how you present, and misinterpretation it's a ripe situation for misinterpretation with texting, you know, messaging and all that kind of stuff.
Well, again, this goes back to the whole idea that millennials are, I've been told that there's no such thing as like a long lasting job necessarily.
Exactly.
So if they misinterpret something, they could be more overly sensitive to that.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, right. Right. And then I think that the piece, you know, when I talk to millennials, which I do a lot, obviously, it's not that they want to job hop. It's just that they feel people who what we would consider job hopping, like they just don't feel like anyone's got their back, that they're not invested.
Mm-hmm.
So and particularly a Gen Xer and a millennial may just really clash on this. Of course, I'm invested. Let me know how it went.
Yep.
That's me telling you how invested I am. Right.
Yep.
It's very different from a millennial perspective. So the first question a millennial might ask in an interview is, who's my mentor going to be?
Mm-hmm.
And how many volunteer days do I get? Like, totally opposite points of view, right?
Yes, totally.
Totally different points of view. But the mentorship piece, to know that someone's invested in me, is paramount. It's paramount for the millennial.
Now, it's interesting. I think about my journey as a Gen Xer with my job. I mean, I was at Costco for almost 12 years, which is a long time. But I had a couple of short stints at other jobs, but none of them were less than a year. None of them were less than a year.
Yeah.
And then now I've been doing this for a decade. So it's like, it's almost as if the and this is just from my experience, you could probably speak to it better than I could. But I mean, you know, yet boomers stayed at a job for as long as, I mean, because that, and Seth Godin talks about this too, you know, the idea that that's what you had and you got vacation, that's what was valued and all the time you put in. And then I think Gen Xers find that they have a couple more careers, but they stay in those a lot longer. Mm-hmm. And then you've got the millennial set, which again, they're, and I think startup culture does a lot of this too, because you're reinventing and there's constant pivoting. Like, 3 years at a job seems like an extended period of time for people.
Yeah. Well, in San Francisco, where my business is headquartered, San Francisco, the average tenure for someone under 30 is something like 2 years.
Yeah.
Average tenure under 25, 26 is 13 months, right? And our approach on this is, okay, if someone – I assume someone coming into my company is not going to want to stay more than 2 years.
Wow.
How can I get them to stay for 3 or 4? Success is going to be, you know, average plus. If I can get someone to stay for 3 years, then I win.
Right.
I win. They win. I win. And we're very much focused on that. If we assume someone's going to leave us fast, then we can and this is what my second book is really about. We assume people are going to leave fast. So a lot of companies, a lot of managers are not bothering to invest in those people, which then propagates the truth, which is they leave. But if we assume they're going to leave fast, then, you know, you need to double down on the training fast so you make them as useful as possible. The more useful people are, the longer they want to stay.
That's going to have a direct impact on productivity overall.
Productivity, and productivity obviously leads to profitability.
Right.
So the reason I wrote this book was because of our epic failure at doing my last book, doing epic failure, right? We hired 6 millennials within 2 months of each other, and they all were gone within 3 months. And I've managed huge teams, 700, 600, 800 people in different companies. Never had 100% failure in recruiting. I was known for being a great recruiter and retainer, and people didn't want to leave the companies that I was leading or the groups that I was leading. And here, 6 came in, 6 went out within 3 months of each other, total failure. And when I looked at it, it was, wow, that is it's just a different group.
Yep.
So how, you know, so you have to, what shift do you have to make so that even if it's tough, you get them to keep longer? So that was, you know, that's what I really delved into it and figured out how to flip things around. And the reality I found is that when companies and groups and teams work to help millennials thrive, everybody benefits. But if you don't do it, then you won't keep them. And then all you're doing is churning and just driving profit out of your day.
Right, right. How important is simplification in this whole process?
Simplification of what?
Just in general, like simplifying processes, simplifying making it so that, because again, while millennials, I mean, I think that if you can make it as inclusive as possible, I would imagine, then that way you're not, you know, like, so I've dealt with a client who's, you know, who deals with hiring. And, you know, rather than have different sets of parameters, like how far they're going to search outside of, let's say, their city or their state or wherever, like if you can create an overarching simplicity across your organization or across, you know, like that's got to play a huge role in because each of those groups, you know, again, boomers, millennials and Gen Xers are all going to deal with that in their own way. But because it's simple, they can wrap their head around it, I would imagine.
Yeah. And I think simplicity is repeatable, mm-hmm. right? Simplicity, you can actually tell the story on simple stories are the best ones to tell. If, you know, long story long, you know, no one wants to hear those stories.
Yeah.
But if you can tell, you know, sort of like Game of Thrones, right? I really cannot tell. I mean, I'm so enthralled with Game of Thrones, but I actually haven't started watching any of the series this season because I can't invest myself in it yet.
Yep.
Because it's just too complicated to tell. But, you know, Big Bang Theory, I could tell you that in 2 seconds, right? Because it's a simple story.
Yeah.
So the simpler it is, the more rememberable it is. The more rememberable it is, the more propagation it is. And if everybody can, you know, if you go around the – we had this happen, I guess, a year and a half ago where, you know, it was a sort of a new – after we figured this, you know, a new crop of people. We had – we were very excited by people we brought on, but we weren't doing a good job of making sure everyone understood our values, how we do things, all that kind of stuff. So I did this simple survey to my staff, half of whom had been there more than 6 years. Like, and I just asked, what are our values? How would you know if someone did this and this and – oh my God, it was terrible. So I realized we had to go back to making it simple so people could say it out loud, right? Mm-hmm. What came out of that process is, superhero, we want to be the ninjas, right?
Yeah.
So from the ninjas, it was like, what does ninja mean? Well, some people interpreted this superheroes. So now we have this t-shirt that we all wear every once in a while that is, you know, us as superheroes. Mm-hmm. And it's just a reminder of, okay, super, this is what ninjas do. This is what ninjas do. And the more, every time you have to look at a checklist, you've lost half the people.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So simpler is rememberable. Rememberable is propagatable. And if you think about it that way, you're going to get a lot more, less friction in your day and a lot more compliance.
Well, and again, that gets back to interpretation. A checklist can easily be, I mean, this is where when we get into productivity and efficiency, it's like, you know, I mean, objective versus subjective. The exactly. objective of the team is to do this. How we get there, what everybody brings to the table is very subjective, right? So that's why I don't necessarily like it when a complicated approach. So a framework, like let's say a complicated productivity approach is brought into the organization, or a complicated tool, which is even worse.
Right.
And they're said, okay, you have to use this. It becomes, well, they spend more time with the tool than they do with what the tool is meant to do.
Exactly. Right? And like SharePoint.
Yeah, exactly. Or project, right?
Oh my God.
but let's talk about one of those tools, which is emails. And you've got a post that I love this because you and I speak the same language when it comes to this, when it comes to after hours email. And of course,
oh, yeah.
You know, France has passed a law. Like, how bad?
I saw that. Oh my God.
How bad is it? I mean, that's first off, being Canadian, I'm like, well, that's the kind of thing we would do. But right. I would imagine in the U.S., you guys would be like, that's so un-American, right? Like, how dare you in fringe upon. But why, when it gets so bad that a government has to say it's against the law to not to respond, but to persecute somebody who doesn't respond. I mean, of course, the headline says it's against the law to do email, but that's not really what it is. If the employer sends it and you don't respond, the employer can't do anything about it. You're a big believer in, again, that's a boundary thing. And I think that, how do you help people set boundaries that are reasonable?
Yeah.
And because, again, I think there's so much bleed. Work-life balance, I think, has been thrown out the window. It's work-life integration. So how do you create those boundaries around that?
Yeah. So here's what we do, because everybody we work with has something else going on in their lives, right?
Sure.
And that something else may have to happen during the regular course of the 9-to-5, what people might call the regular day,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yep.
And the first thing I tell all parents is to make sure you're reading your school emails during the day. Otherwise, you get stuck with the bad, you know, the time-consuming things all the time, right? Mm-hmm. So when my kids were in elementary and middle school, I was famous for always signing up for brownies because brownies are easy for me and I can drop them off and not have to do anything. And like, Lee, you always sign up for the brownies. Oh, yeah, because I'm the first one ever into the Google Doc.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't show up for, you know, the setup and the takedown because, you know, people who are late get stuck. So I tell all my employees who are parents, make sure you're reading your school emails whenever they come through. So the boundary is, I think, twofold. One is what is the work at hand and what could happen? So, for instance, we work with some food companies. Well, food companies, that's a 24/7 job sometimes during the year, right? Sometimes, like maybe there's a recall. There's a recall right now. I mean, there's a recall every day, right? And in Canada, actually, the rules are even tighter than they are in America for food recalls. Well, a food recall, that's you can't do anything about the fact that someone ate something that got you sick and it happened to happen on a weekend, right? But that's not going to happen every day.
Right.
That's not going to happen every weekend. So understanding what are the episodes, where would you need flexibility, because the weekend is the weekend. And we really try our hardest not to work on the weekends.
But damage control is damage control.
Like, you can't do anything about that, right?
Right.
So number one, like what is the – let's set some expectations every day. When something extraordinary happens, what does that change from our expectation? Because when something extraordinary happens that causes us to have to switch, everyone needs to understand what that switch requires. That's number one. Number two is, okay, so our goal is really from a client relation perspective, we don't want our clients thinking that we're going to respond after 7 p.m., that they can just count on us to work 24/7 around the clock because they were lazy.
Well, yeah, and it's very, I mean, I'm sure that anyone listening to this, when you send an email, it's not just the contents of the email, it's whatever's in the subject line. If it shows the time, then you've set a precedent, and that's precedent. Very clear.
Exactly. And so I don't want anyone sending client emails unless we're in an emergency situation after, really 6 p.m.
Right.
Because that's setting the one that tells the client, that might tell the client you're lazy and you're just not managing your time, where you couldn't get it done during the regular day, right? Mm-hmm. And number two, it tells them that you're available. Oh, he's still there. Let me give a call.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
I know one more thing, before you leave. So this, what not only does the work reflect on you, but the time reflects on you kind of thing.
It also gets you, it also puts you in the position where you have choice of, When you get to see how they react to it.
Exactly.
So if you've got someone that, even though you don't send email after 6, if you've got people that are still doing it, then that's where, in your case, someone come to you and say, hey, look, so-and-so is consistently sending me emails in the after hours, and now they're getting volatile. They're getting, that sets up a precedent that you can say, okay, you know what, either we have to look at this, and I either step in and say, this is not acceptable, or B, you just cut off the relationship completely and say, we're no longer going to work with you because you're not willing to adhere to our expectations.
Which I've done.
Yeah, I'm sure you have. Sure. I'm sure you have. But I love the fact that you've been, and I think people can do this, and I don't think, you're the boss, so you get to say, hey, everyone, I'm giving you permission to do this. But mm-hmm. people can do this on their own initially.
Absolutely.
They don't need permission. They can, they should test the waters. I mean, their situation might be completely different. But I think this is where quantitative and qualitative come into play, where you say in point one, use time delay if you're going to send the email between 6 and 8. Well, that's
6 p.m. and
8 a.m. Yeah, 6 p.m. and 8 p.m. Sorry, yeah, good point. 6 p.m. and 8 a.m. That's clear. That you can't get any clearer than that. If you say don't answer emails in the evening, well, when does the evening begin? What time?
Right.
You need to be very specific about it because it allows you to hold to it.
And specific in your own time zone, right? Because we have teams over the country, and actually we have, some people in Europe. So, be true to your time zone is fine.
Sure.
Right? Because the thing about this, the email is I love email. It's an awesome tool. I have some tools that help me use my email, right? But it helps, basically, email creates the expectation that someone else's priorities become your priorities, right? And how do you set boundaries around that so that's not true? Well, first, it's understanding what does the day look like for that. The team is the first piece. Your team is number one. So if you have to go to a ballet lesson at 2 o'clock on Thursday and your team needs something done by 5, well, your part of it then needs to move way earlier than that ballet lesson, right? That's your responsibility. If it doesn't work for the team, it doesn't work for you, period. So we do a lot of that. And it only really takes one or two times for someone, if at all, to someone say, oh, yeah, I screwed up, right? Because no one wants to, we don't want to let other people down.
No.
And then the second piece is to understand that, I'm working late. I have many things going on in my life. And sometimes I have a board meeting, I'm on 3 board, that kind of stuff. So I might be catching up to the work that I had hoped, in a regular day would have gotten done by 6
o'clock. Well, you're writing a book. That's a classic example.
Book.
I mean,
exactly.
I write my book from 10 p.m. to midnight is some of my best writing time.
Right.
I'm not sending email at that time because if I do, then I've basically I haven't blocked out the time and I'm using the time dishonestly.
Or, I say, I'm going to catch up on my other work so that tomorrow morning when everybody comes in, they have the stuff they need from me.
Right.
It may happen from 10 to 12.
But you're not going to give that indication. No one needs to know that.
But I'm not going to indicate that at all.
Yeah.
Right? It's not the burden of me working late, because particularly for a boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
Even if you say, don't send me an email, I'm not going to look at it. If you send emails in 10 to 12, you're setting a precedent like that. That person values extra work. Now, that's interpretation that someone may or may not have, right?
Right.
So I'm very specific about that. And, you know, I'm bad at it because I have to, I have a big sticky on my computer. Time delay.
Yep. Totally.
You know?
And that to me is important because what, again, if you were to say, all right, again, let's say you sent that email, the message you're sending isn't just I'm up, but now you're saying as the boss, if I'm doing this, then, you're not saying this implicitly. You're not even saying this at all, but someone could interpret that as, absolutely. Well, if she's doing it, then I better be.
Well, and that's how office politics happen, right?
Totally.
Because I never, unless we're in a critical situation where, okay, I need someone who is going to do the 12 to 4 a.m. shift, right? Because sometimes we have to say that, mm-hmm. right? First, and number one, I'm the first, always try to be the first one to volunteer for that. So I'm setting the precedent that I will do that work. I'm not just having other people do that terrible shift, right? Mm-hmm. It doesn't happen very often, but, you know, one, sometimes we need to have that. But to make sure you're explaining this extraordinary event, right? But the office politics happen around, I know she values that because she's up and doing that, so I'm going to do that and create this pressure. And then you just see it just fall apart.
Right.
Right? Because someone, not because they're mean, but they're assertive and they're ambitious, right?
Right.
And they read into, particularly ambitious people who want to get ahead fast and all that kind of stuff, which I am one of those people. I mean, I elevated really fast in my career. This is really sort of before email, that's how old I am. But, you know, you take the cues and you follow their leads. And then before you know it, someone hates you because she's the teacher's pet, you know?
Yeah. No, it creates, and it's not intended. But like with anything else, you bring humans into the equation, emotion comes in. It's not always logical, right? So,
well, and there's nothing productive about emotion.
No. Well, actually,
unless it's fun.
Well,
there's nothing positive about, there's nothing productive about negative emotions.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think if you're aware of the emotions, then they can serve you, but it's what you do with them that decides how productive Definitely. They're going to be. Well, you know what, Lee? This has been awesome. And I really want to thank you for joining me this week on the show. Where can people find you and your work online so that way they can continue the conversation and also like get some of those really cool downloads that you have?
The best place to reach me is on my website, which is leecaraher.com, leecaraher.com. On Twitter, I'm at leecaraher. And from those places, you can get to my agency, my book, my tools, my blog posts, everything like that.
Awesome. Thanks so much for joining me this week on the Productivityist Podcast.
Thanks for having me, Mike. I really appreciate it.
There you have it. You can find everything that we talked about, all the relevant show notes, links rather, in the show notes. We had a lot to discuss, and I had a great time. I'm going to have Lee on the show again in the future when her new book comes out, because there's a lot more gold that we can mine that's in there as well. If you wanted to hear more of this episode, there's a good 15 additional minutes that the Patreon supporters of the Productivityist Podcast get. And they get this every single week. They get additional content every single week. Head over to patreon.com/productivityist, check it out, and see all the perks that are offering and support the show monetarily if you can. If you cannot, then please rate the show, review the show in iTunes or in Stitcher Radio or wherever you're listening to your podcast, because it will help me make the show better. It'll also help my producer, John Polster, out, who does a fantastic job, so he can help me make the show better. That's it for this week. Thanks again to Lee Caraher for joining me. Thanks to all of you for joining me. And until next time, I'm Mike Vardy, the founder of Productivityist and the host of this very podcast, Productivityist Podcast, reminding you to stop guessing and start going.